Hello, everyone. We warmly welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Today is Sunday, December 1st already, 2019, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. So glad you could join us this Thanksgiving weekend. Lawrence, you can start with our morning prayer.
Yes, this is a part of an instruction by Mrs. Eddy on page 275 of the Blue Book. May each day unfold to you the manifold treasures of Christian Science, and may you become the rich partakers thereof. Remember that the power to heal is gained through peace, wisdom, love, dominion over self, and goodwill toward men. You possess these graces of spirit or Christ power only by loving God good supremely. After this cometh the recognition of but one mind, which enables you to know that there is no power or presence that can resist good or prevent your prayers being effectual. While you remain in this attitude of mind, you are obedient to the principle of your being, and not can hinder your healing the sick and the sinner.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Linda, the watching point.
Watch number 34. Watch that you be consistent in your handling of error, not overlooking an error in yourself or claiming immunity from it while you continue to hold it as real in another. In the habit of criticism, it is well to remember that which does the criticizing is no more real or part of man than what is criticized. When someone in a family is ill, he suffers with feel sickness, in contrast to the others who suffer with see sickness. When error appears real to you, even though it may be manifested by another, it becomes part of your problem, which is to unsee and to make nothing of error whenever and wherever it presents itself. One burned out bulb and a string of Christmas tree lights that are connected in a series will cause them all to go out. As God's children, we are all banded together in the bonds of love. To see one of God's little ones as a burned out bulb are cut off from God, and hence under the control of error, shuts off your current and robs you of your spiritual light. This attitude constitutes malpractice on your brother. It does not help him, and it harms you. In Matthew 5:23, we read, quote, "Therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, first be reconciled to thy brother, and then come offer thy gift." End quote.
Any comments on that one?
I like the feel sickness and the see sickness. Yeah, right. That's really, really points it out. Yeah. And it also reminded me of the watching point where he said, "Give me one more day to know this never happened."
Yes, thank you.
Well, this is an important distinction between what a lot of people refer to as faith healing and what is true Christian, true healing. Because you can faith heal without seeing the nothingness, without understanding the nothingness. But it's not a true healing until you understand the nothingness of sin, sickness, and death. You haven't really healed anything.
It's a call to be consistent, isn't it? We want to know the truth for ourselves, but are you knowing it for everyone? This is certainly how Jesus healed. He saw in science, he saw the perfect man when others saw a sinning mortal man. A quote from Mrs. Eddy. So, and that doesn't mean that you're just blind to what's going wrong or that you don't rebuke what's going wrong or is wrong. You can acknowledge its claims, as Mrs. Eddy says, but then to do what?
Deny its power.
Yes. Announce its power.
Deny.
And very important. And in Science and Health, on citation 7, Mrs. Eddy says, science shows that material conflicting mortal opinions and beliefs emit the effects of error at all times. But this atmosphere of mortal mind cannot be destructive to morals and health when it is what?
Opposed promptly and persistently by Christian Science.
Yes. Truth and love antidote this mental miasma and thus invigorate and sustain existence. So this is what we are doing, and we should be constantly doing it. It's very important that we do and replace what seems to be wrong with the truth. And our subject today, ancient and modern necromancy, alias mesmerism and hypnotism, denounced. And so, Chardell, what did you write about denounce?
Now, I have to admit, I spoke my post to Jeremy before I wrote it, and I told him all my ideas, and then he helped me write it.
Okay.
That's my admission. It's longer than I usually do. But this is beautiful record because the writer takes us through each step from the Old Testament to the New Testament, and then Mrs. Eddy clinches it when she totally exposes what mesmerism really is. So first your defense is God, then you must bring every thought to the obedience of the Christ. And then Mrs. Eddy explains it, and then you must use these tools. And that's denounce.
Yes, and what is your definition of denounce?
Denounce, it's the public, and I forget the exact next word. It's publicly announced as evil, and it's done openly. That's to denounce.
Yes, and that is what we have to do. Denounce it as unreal and as untrue.
And one of the reasons for denouncing it is because a lot of people confuse Christian Science with hypnotism or human will or faith healing, all of which are the same and all of which have nothing to do with Christian Science, zero to do with Christian Science. A lot of people think that there are similarities between Christian Science and, say, hypnotism or mental manipulation or whatever. And this confusion was big. It was rampant at the time, and it still is today. So Mrs. Eddy saw the need to say, no, 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 no. No comparison. We, in fact, denounce it. That's why there's a subject twice a year on the subject, or a lesson on the subject twice a year.
Yeah. Mesmerism or animal magnetism was first brought into notice by Mesmer in Germany in 1775, according to the American Encyclopedia. He regarded this so-called force, which he said could be exerted by one living organism over another, as a means of alleviating disease. The author's own observation of the workings of animal magnetism convinced her that it is not a remedial agent and that its effects upon those who practice it and upon their subjects who do not resist it lead to moral and to physical what?
Death.
It's something we don't want to fool around with. It's all belief, belief versus understanding, but it's something to be aware of. And today we're going to talk about it, and we're going to talk about it, and I don't think I'm trying to scare you. I hope I'm not trying to scare you, but I am trying to wake you up. Mrs. Eddy says in doing a watch, what is it important that you feel?
The power of danger.
Yes, both, but I was looking for danger.
You have to feel the danger.
You have to feel the danger. Why is that true?
Then you know to do something about it.
Thank you very much.
It's not just a bland denial. If you don't feel the danger, then you just blandly say, oh, that's not true.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, because so secret are the present methods of animal magnetism that they ensnare the age into indolence and produce the very apathy on the subject which the criminal desires. Sleep on. You know, what has happened to the Christian Science movement couldn't have possibly happened if people were not apathetic or indolent. You have to always have your feelers out. It is nothing to fear, because as this week's lesson in Psalm says, my defense is of God, which saveth the upright in heart. So the question is, are you upright in heart? I mean, if you're not, well, then maybe you do need to feel some fear there until you get there. And the definition of defense, anything that opposes attack, violence, danger, or injury, guard, protection, security. Isn't that what everyone is looking for today? God is your defense. He will save you from any of these things. But the upright of heart, and in week after week, we're learning about what it is to be upright in heart. So God is our defense, and we have nothing ever to fear. Now, Parthens, in his blog, it is related that Sir Humphrey Davy once apparently cured a case of paralysis simply by introducing a thermometer into the patient's mouth. This he did merely to ascertain the temperature of the patient's body, but the sick man supposed this ceremony was intended to heal him, and he recovered accordingly. Such a fact illustrates our theories. And of course, this is what Mrs. Eddy saw, right, all the time, didn't she? This effect of thought. So did anyone watch his video? What was that about? The video he posted.
Yes, I did.
Okay, you want to tell us briefly what it was about, Dale?
Well, it was about a surgeon that took part in sham surgery. They had set up three different groups. Two groups had the actual surgery, and the third group, this was on... I think arthritis in the knee or something, very, very painful knee condition. And the third group was set up in the same way in the surgery, and they went through every motion with the camera so that the patient could see that something was actually being operated on, and made the noises and passed the equipment back and forth so that everyone was absolutely convinced that this surgery happened, but they didn't do anything to the third group. They opened up the knee and closed it back up. And to make a long story short, after a period of time, they tested everyone, and everyone in every single group was successful and had, good success and were healed. And then even later, even 7 years later, this reporter went back and spoke with one of the people that had the surgery, the sham surgery. And he had been in so much pain before the surgery that he was even crying, telling about it 7 years later. But after the so-called recovery time, he was totally free. He could do everything he had ever done. He could dance all night, and it was just wonderful. And so that was the what Mrs. Eddy had told about in her writings of somebody, you know, just by thinking that something had happened, it happened.
The water, Wendy thought it was losing blood, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this was an experiment that was conducted by a hospital in Houston. Somebody in the hospital decided they were going to conduct an experiment. And they organized these knee
operations
for people who were suffering from this painful knee problem. And somebody set up the groups, and even the surgeons who were conducting the surgery didn't know until the very last minute whether they were going to actually do the real surgery or do the fake surgery. And all the operating rooms were set up so that there was a camera, so the person could see the surgery being done on their knee. And then the fake surgery, they had a fake movie that showed somebody having the knee done, but it wasn't theirs. So everybody thought that they were having the operation. And in her interview of one of the persons who had the fake surgery, in other words, didn't have the real surgery, he had to admit that the surgery didn't heal him. It was his thought, or he referred to it as his mind, healed him.
Something to think about when you're in a lot of pain.
But isn't this a little bit that what goes on also, this mesmeric kind of propaganda that goes on also with the consumer, with the, especially at this time of the year, that entices people to buy and buy and buy more because of the belief that they're getting a bargain? So I think it's not only medicine that this kind of mesmerism goes on, which, you know, it's obvious, I see it all the time, but it's also with the consumer, with anything that's going outside, the propaganda, that whatever you read and or in the media, and it, you let yourself be influenced by it, is a mesmeric action. It's something that it's not real, but yet it makes the person believe that yes, I'm getting a bargain.
Yes. What did you say, Jeremy, about the Thanksgiving Day bargains?
I don't remember exactly what I said, but I mean, it's all just a sham.
Well, you said that they weeks before Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah, they slowly raise the prices in the week before, and then they drop them back to what they were in September.
So, well, yes, thank you, Pilar. All of this is mesmeric suggestion. It's why I think Jeremy can take it down now, but for a long time we had this William Rathbun short article that Joe found about mass mesmerism, how it works and how you have to be aware of your thinking. You cannot be mesmerized. And they, at one time they used to say, couldn't mesmerize a Christian Scientist. If you are a true one, you cannot. You're not a true one. You're very easily mesmerized because you believe in the power of thought and you're just a dupe for it, which we see in the movement. We see in the sleep that goes on. Not among everyone, but if they're in that organization,
they don't feel the danger, then they have something's not right.
Then something's not right.
I had read about the man that conducted the experiments to see whether gluten really was a bad thing. And initially he concluded that gluten was a bad thing. But then he did it again and he made sure he controlled every bit of it. And they found that gluten wasn't a bad thing at all. And people still would be sick, even though he knew there was no gluten in anything that they got. And he concluded people just wanted to be sick. And I guess it really demoralized them from you know, like human science.
Thank you.
How could you control it if people just want to be sick?
Thank you.
Well, I think there's just a whole lot of fooling going around with false beliefs. That's all.
That's
and
it.
We believe them. That's it.
That's
it's
it.
Wonderful through science to be in the right mind to recognize what's true and what is not.
Yeah, and these experiments show that life is mental.
Yeah.
We are mental beings, and that our thought affects everything about us. It affects our health. It affects our purchasing, our buying habits. It affects everything about us. And it should lead us to science. Should lead us to the one mind that governs everything correctly. Which is what our golden text is.
Yes. The government shall be upon his shoulder. All governing on God's shoulder. Carol, will you read the responsive reading?
Except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah. Hear the word of the Lord, ye rulers of Sodom. Give ear unto the law of our God, ye people of Gomorrah. Woe be unto the pastors that destroy and scatter the sheep of my pasture, saith the Lord. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, against the pastors that feed my people, ye have scattered my flock and driven them away and have not visited them. Behold, I will visit upon you the evil of your doings, saith the Lord. And I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries whither I have driven them, and will bring them again to their folds, and they shall be fruitful and increase. And I will set up shepherds over them, which shall feed them, and they shall fear no more, nor be dismayed, neither shall they be lacking, saith the Lord. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth.
Thank you. And Jeremy, what did you write? Not-
well, when reading him, I just couldn't help but feel that this was about Plainfield, or at least how Plainfield is in my experience. It's funny, because initially I thought, is this too obvious? Should I even write this? Because is this just, I mean, it feels so true that this is, you know, we're pulled again to these folds, and that's Plainfield, and the shepherds are the practitioners, and the branch is the church, and the king is the Christ, and I don't know, it just really gave me great comfort this week, so.
And it is wonderful. As we had a Bible study on the remnant, which was very excellent. And to remember that always throughout time, there's always been, it's never been a big group. It's always been the smaller group. But people who are awake and working and who see what's going on, and they're not mesmerized by the masses or the techniques that are used to mesmerize you, because they're awake and working, which is why we do all this all the time, every week, keep ourselves awake. I found this was something that Dale had found about our Bible study. Oh, it was the Bible study of May 11th, 2019. The conditions of Judah and Jerusalem in the time of Isaiah were discussed. Matthew Henry said that the people were idolatrous, stupid, senseless people, ungrateful. Wickedness was universal. And then, except the Lord of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like Gomorrah. Concerning this, Matthew Henry says, the Lord of hosts left unto them a small remnant that were kept pure from the common apostasy and kept safe and alive from the common calamity. Christ is a little flock. It is good for people that they have been saved from utter ruin to look back to see how much they owed to a few good men that stood in the gap. And so it is. And so we are working now today to be that remnant, to keep the purity of this science going, and to be awake, working, watching continually. And this was another very good quote that Joe sent me from the diary records of James F. Gilman. Mrs. Eddy had told me when I was at Pleasant View, March 28, 1893, substantially as follows, that I might know when I was unconsciously getting into the toils of animal magnetism by watching the state of my thought. If I found it to be the self-satisfied order, pleased with my progress generally, the pleased at nothing, self-complacent thought, I might then know that I was astray, but that when I found myself in a sense of patient meekness and humility, dissatisfied with personal sense, and willing to do anything for the sake of the Christ, I could then be reasonably sure I was in the way of health and wholeness. So again, the idea of this humility, always striving, not going to sleep.
And not being satisfied with the human condition, but rather being satisfied with God's presence.
And then there was a very interesting article. It's a newspaper called the Epoch Times, and they have extremely interesting articles. And this was one on Abraham Lincoln and Thanksgiving. And it was about his proclamation. Now, Lincoln was the first one to establish a Thursday of every year, the last Thursday of every year, is a day of Thanksgiving. But this author brings out that it was not just a day of Thanksgiving, but also of reflection. Those of you who know the history of our country and the history of the Civil War, Lincoln at first, the reason he had the war, it was started. Does anyone know why? It was to preserve the Union. That was what his intent was. He was just doing it because he thought it would be god awful if the newly banded together United States split in half. But around the time that he gave this proclamation and decided it was a time to have a day of thanksgiving and reflection, he realized that the real purpose of this war was to abolish slavery. And he felt deeply, because he was an extremely God-based person, that, and we know God doesn't punish, but we were in a terrible state, thousands of people dying. Originally, they thought the war was going to be over in a few months. Thousands of people dying, widowed, terrible tragedy. He himself, he lost two sons, one of them in the middle of all this, at least one of them, if not two. It was a terrible time. And I think he knew that our country needed to break and get on its knees. And he says in this proclamation, "And I recommend to them that while offering up the ascriptions justly due to him for such singular deliverances and blessings, they do also with humble penitence for our national perverseness and disobedience, commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable civil strife in which we are unavoidably engaged, and fervently implore the interposition of the Almighty hand to heal the wounds of the nation and restore it as soon as may be consistent with the divine purposes to the full enjoyment of peace, harmony, tranquility, and union." End quote. And then the author says, "It is scarcely conceivable that a modern politician, let alone in the midst of monumental national crisis, would ever refer to our national perverseness and disobedience. And yet that is precisely what Lincoln did. Alongside with gratitude, thanksgiving, he called for humility and repentance. Now, once that decision was made, and I will say, after studying the Civil War, it was partly made due to the efforts of Frederick Douglass, who had the ear of the president. When they changed the decision and said, it's time to abolish slavery, everything changed. And there was a fervor and a fervency, certainly on the part of the North, and I will say abolitionists, and then also those who wanted to continue their economic lifestyle. But that was the turnaround when he realized this was a horrible, and the country knew it, we knew it, Washington knew it, all the founding fathers knew slavery was wrong. Even though some of them had slaves at some times, they knew instinctively, certainly Hamilton knew it was wrong. Many of them knew it was wrong, but it just was not the right time. They were just trying to get the country started. But as soon as it was the right time, fought with a vengeance, and we did win that war.
They did put things into place that led to
it did.
Too, like Jefferson, he did a lot of writing and did a lot of things. I can't pull the facts out, but I was amazed on how much he did put into place, helped.
He did.
And Washington, too.
Certainly Washington. And Jefferson, too, if you really study the man, because I know right now so many of these people have been maligned. But I say, walk a mile in their shoes. I say, what have you done for the freedom of mankind? And then you can tell me that you want to knock down statues of some of these people. Anyway, it was this, and there were a lot of people working. Seward was certainly one who was working for this abolition of slavery, which was wrong. And I do believe, we were being stricken by our disobedience, as we will continue to be as individuals and as a nation. If our policies become more and more secular, there will be a price. So, the day of Thanksgiving, let it be a day of Thanksgiving, but also of reflection, purifying yourself as a person. You should be doing this every day as we talk about clearing your slate at night. Have you obeyed God's precepts? Have you done the best you can? Are you grateful? Are you loving? Doing that every day before you go to bed. But then, are we doing it as a nation? And how can we do better? And the only way we can do better, we collectively, is I individually. Each one of us must do better to purify the atmosphere, to end the mass mesmerism that says these wicked ways are okay. They are not okay. There was also recently an article about As witchcraft spikes in America, author warns the spirit of Jezebel is alive and Christians should take it seriously. He's written a book, Jezebel's War with America, The Plot to Destroy Our Country and What We Can Do to Turn the Tide. And he writes some facts. He says the U.S. witch population has seen an astronomical rise. The fastest growing religion in America is witchcraft. Numbers of witches rises dramatically across U.S. as millennials reject Christianity. There are now more practicing witches in the U.S. than ever before.
I want to add, too, that it also is called neo-paganism, and it's also under the worship of nature. I have to get the word, but it comes in also another subtle form. It isn't called witchcraft now all the time. And sometimes it's called about, worshiping the sun or nature, love of nature, and it gets mixed in and gets confusing because it sounds like they're protecting the earth or taking care of the earth, but it's also mixed in with worshiping
Thank you very much.
Material aspect of it.
Right. And that's how the devil works. He tries to mimic what is right.
Or mix and confuse. There's a beautiful poem. I was reading it. We were having spiritual readings yesterday. It's written by Whittier. And he takes the subject up in the most beautiful way. A very short version of the poem is called The Quiet Room. And actually, Mrs. Eddy had it framed and given to one of her students in her house at Chestnut Hill. And Longyear sells the little poem called The Quiet Room. Did you get my pocketbook? Anyway, but the whole poem, Whittier talks about the beauty of nature. I was reading it to Carol. We were crying yesterday. The beauty of nature, how it captures you. But it says when you're out there, you know, there's so many distractions about the whole thing. And how important it is that you have a quiet room. So let me see. I have it here. I was having my spiritual reading. He needs no special place of prayer whose hearing ear is everywhere. And then, dream not, O friend, because I seek this quiet shelter twice a week. I better deem its pine-laid floor than breezy hill or sea-sung shore. But nature is not solitude. She crowds us with her thronging wood. Her many hands reach out to us. Her many tongues are garrulous. Perpetual riddles of surprise she offers to our ears and eyes. She will not leave our senses still, but drags them captive at her will. And making earth too great for heaven, she hides the giver in the given. And then this is the poem, The Quiet Room. And so I find it well to come for deeper rest to this still room, or hear the habit of the soul feel less the outer world's control. The strength of mutual purpose pleads more earnestly our common needs, and from the silence multiplied by these still forms on either side, the world that time and sense have known falls off and leaves us God alone. Now, I love nature. I love the beauty of it. I love the fact it does speak to us of God, as did Mrs. Eddy. But I know there are people who just want to go out and walk in the woods rather than have this. We all need the quiet time alone with God. And Whittier, John Greenleaf Whittier, who is responsible for many of our beautiful hymns, was once healed by Mrs. Eddy. And he writes so beautifully of all this. So remember to have that time alone with your father. Have your quiet space somewhere. And I thought it was very beautiful. He talks about coming twice weekly. So sounds like he went to church. I'm sure he did. And anyway, that's a response to some of the
neo-paganism.
Yeah. And then there's one other very important thing I want to mention that I learned this weekend. And it is called the wisdom of a kindergarten. The wisdom of kindergarten. And what is that, Jeremy?
That is, don't yuck somebody's yum.
Don't yuck somebody's yum. How many times have you made something and you'll have a child go, yuck? Or you'll tell someone, an adult, something wonderful, and they'll say, oh, what's so great about that? So I just thought it was a very good way, if anyone yucks your yummy, to tell them not to yuck your yummy. Let's appreciate each other.
Worthy of Carpenter, the way he puts things too.
So. Well, that's true. It was wisdom from the kindergarten class. Anyway, So in the lesson, the Bible, it just speaks over and over of what to do and how important it is to be working. I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause. Now, all of us are seeking unto God. And for those, and I know many, you know, you have this physical problem. You're seeking unto God for an answer or a relationship problem, any kind of a problem. You seek unto God. But, you know, if that's all you're doing and all you want is your physical, personal healing, after a while, I interpreted this as having a greater cause, getting outside yourself and seeking a greater cause. And in seeking that greater cause, you will find the healing that you also seek.
And you may find healings that you never thought you needed as well.
You will. This is science healing. It will be a total healing. God will be perfecting all that concerns you. But if you're too focused on your own problems, your problems will tend to grow instead of go.
This is the same as that too soon you cannot. But the cure, to find the cure in working for God, really, it is true.
It is very true. And then it goes on, and this is a treatment. I know Peter V. Ross has made this into a treatment. This Job, it's wonderful to work with in our watches. He disappointeth the devices of the crafty so that their hands cannot perform their enterprise. It goes on, knowing that any evil action will come to naught. Anyone who is trying to maliciously harm another, it will come to naught. It will blow up in their faces. We can know this. It's the truth. And then the beautiful story about Asa, how he turned away from all the false teachings. Just as Abraham Lincoln turned away from having that as his goal, just preserving the Union. That was a compromise. It was too nice.
It's too human.
Too human, and it didn't work. It failed. It's partly why the war went on as long as it did. It wasn't until there was a righteous cause that people really got into it. They said, okay, we're going to defeat this error, whatever it takes. And then they entered into a covenant to seek the Lord God of their fathers with all their heart and with all their soul. The story of the pilgrims that I was giving on Wednesday night, they sought it with all their heart and all their soul. Boy, did they ever. They wanted to worship God freely. And what is a covenant?
Promise between you and God?
Yes.
It's a contract. Is a legally binding contract.
We all have a responsibility to make this covenant with God. As I told you, Mr. Evans asked all his patients to make a covenant. It's really bowing before God and saying, Father, I will obey you. And in that obedience, I know that you will be my defense. You will take care of me. A binding contract that you must never disobey. I took mine, I made it years ago, and I took it very, very seriously, which is partly why I'm still here. No matter what it tries, no matter what it throws at you, you keep going, which comes to what, and I will quote what I guess it was Ken wrote on the forum about setting your face like a flint. Joe wrote to it as well, but Ken found in the Easton Bible Dictionary, the word means that the Messiah would be firm and resolute amidst all contempt and scorn which he would meet, that he had made up his mind to endure it. and would not shrink from any kind or degree of suffering which would be necessary to accomplish the great work in which he was engaged. And Barbara goes on to say that was also Mrs. Eddy, which is absolutely true and has been any seeker of this truth. Arrow will do everything it can to get you to stop. That's why to make a covenant, to set your face like a flint. It's what Joanne wrote to. May she be a worthy stone, unmovable. And to seek it with all your heart, mind, and soul, then nothing will take it from you, no matter how bad the storms may come. You will see it, always see it as an attack on your Christ, an attack to get you to stop the work. If you impersonalize it like that, if it comes as your best friend, as your husband, as a physical problem, it'll come in all lovely disguises. But error is neither person, place, nor thing. So don't be fooled by it. It's the mirage coming up to trick you. Keep walking, keep going, and you will find whatever your problem was, or perhaps still is, if you keep walking and knowing it can have no permanent effect because it's godless, you will prove it. Absolutely prove it. So, and Linda, do you want to say anything about your Liberty Forum?
Well, I thought this was a powerful lesson that was a treatment to address slavery and liberty. I won't read it all because it's long, but I just wanted to express my gratitude because it made me think deeper about our need to fight against this tyranny in all forms for mankind now and the future. We keep hearing that, and it's so important. And the gratitude for the people who've already gone before us. We don't want it to be in vain. And that science and health, this is all to protect the science and health, which is the truth that will make everyone free. And then I think it's important to understand liberty because there's so many levels that it's under attack. And if you don't protect it on all levels, you will lose your science and health, or you'll lose your church, because that's where it's going to attack. And that so liberty is from freedom from restraint. The power of acting as one sees fit, and then without control, exemption from arbitrary will of others, the right, free right to worship the supreme being according to the dictates of conscience without external control, the freedom of a nation or state from all unjust abridgment of its rights and independence by another nation. A restraint of natural liberty not necessary or expedient for the public is tyranny or oppression. So anything that would try to interfere, and I just have learned that being here, I didn't understand it before here, but anything that tries to control anything you're doing is tyranny and wrong, and you got to get rid of it. But Friedrich Hayek wrote that we had to recognize private property as an essential condition for the prevention of coercion. And coercion leads to tyranny. And so I just think we really have a fight ahead of us to defend this.
Because it comes very subtly, and it comes as a, this is a great answer. And this is why I don't understand any working Christian scientist is not in favor of big government. We saw what it did in our church, big government. It's always wanting to take control. It might at first seem, oh, yeah, they'll tell us what to do, but pretty soon it turns very, very rotten. And all you have to do is study history to understand this.
And it's very clearly laid out in the lesson in 2 Corinthians. For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations, casting down every human speculative theory or idea that isn't godlike, and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God. Anything that says that something else besides God is a God to be worshipped, whether it's medicine, whether it's a government, whether it's another person,
academia,
that's our battle. Cast it down. Don't be nice to it, but cast it down.
Denounce it.
And bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. That is our security. And that is our weapon, is our obedience to the Christ.
And that starts with what Chardy wrote about, denouncing it, publicly saying it's evil. You know, Mrs. Evans loved to do that. She was very good about academia, too. She loved to tell you. She never went to college.
Didn't need to.
Well, a lot of great people. Jeremy never did. Look what he's doing. A lot of people here are achieving great things who never had all this education. In fact, it can be a detriment. As we've talked about sometimes what is being taught.
And today it often is.
Today it often is. So don't be impressed with anything except Christliness. And as this consummation draws nearer, he who has shaped his course in accordance with divine science will endure to the end. During this final conflict, wicked minds will endeavor to find means by which to accomplish more evil. But those who discern Christian science will hold crime in check. They will aid in the ejection of error, and they will maintain law and order and cheerfully await the certainty of ultimate perfection. This is our wonderful job that we have graciously and lovingly accepted. And we will conclude on Florence's favorite article, which is Ways That Are Vain.
Are vain.
Delaney, the last two paragraphs.
The natural fruits of Christian Science mind healing are harmony, brotherly love, spiritual growth, and activity. The malicious aim of perverted mind power or animal magnetism is to paralyze good and give activity to evil. It starts factions and engenders envy and hatred. But as activity is by no means a right of evil and its emissaries, they ought not to be encouraged in it. Because this age is cursed with one rancorous and lurking foe to human weal, those who are the truest friends of mankind and conscientious in their desire to do right and to live pure and Christian lives should be more zealous to do good, more watchful and vigilant. Then they will be proportionately successful and bring out glorious results. Unless one's eyes are opened to the modes of mental malpractice, working so subtly that we mistake its suggestions for the impulses of our own thought, the victim will allow himself to drift in the wrong direction without knowing it. Be ever on guard against this enemy. Watch your thoughts and see whether they lead you to God and into harmony with his true followers. Guard and strengthen your own citadel more strongly. Thus, you will grow wiser and better through every attack of your foe, and the golden rule will not rust for lack of use or be misinterpreted by the adverse influence of animal magnetism.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.